Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, everybody. It's Glamour Hey It's Okay, the weekly podcast that's going to help you through any situation, whether it's right on that disgusting train right now or even that disgusting job. We are here to help you. I'm Jo Elvin. I'm the editor-in-chief of Glamour magazine. Today, I'm going to be joined on the podcast by our podcast favorite, James Williams, my deputy editor, and Anita Rani is with us. And we're going to be talking about all sorts of things from embarrassing family members to ambition and whether or not, you know, that's kind of okay. So stay tuned. Yeah, so if anyone enjoying that jingle as we fade back in. Hi, everyone. Hi, I'm Jo. I'm the editor at Glamour. Hi, James.
Hi, Jo Elvin.
How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Very well.
It's here we go again.
It's a bit hot and sweaty in the pod cupboard today.
It's going to get hotter and sweatier.
We are joined today. I'm really excited to host this lady. I don't know how she found the time to be here. Britain's busiest broadcaster. She's star of Country File, The One Show, Strictly Alumni. Now fronting a documentary she's going to tell us all about. Hello, Anita Rani.
Hello, Jo. Hello, James.
Hello, Anita.
Oh, could always be busier, Jo. Could always be busier.
she's looking for some more gigs.
Listen to that broadcast quality voice. Enjoy it, everyone. Yeah. It doesn't happen very often.
An actual professional on the podcast.
Don't know about that, but yeah, it's good to be in this, in the Glamour pod. Yeah.
Welcome. Yeah. You're very welcome.
The Glod.
The Glod.
Yeah.
That's a new name for it.
I know. I've been trying to think, and I have to apologize to Adam Buxton, I started calling everybody podcasts the other day because I listened to his wonderful podcast.
Oh, it's a great podcast.
So much. And I'm expecting someone to yell at me about that. I just slipped into it. Damn you for getting that first Adam Buxton.
Filthy plagiarizer, Joe.
I know. But anyway.
Yeah, any suggestions for what we should call our podcast, pod fans?
What do you want us to call you?
Yeah. Let us know, people.
All of you. So tell us, Anita, how are you?
I'm really well. I've been having a great day, actually. Yeah. Running around London, floating around in the sunshine.
She's got the most highest heels I've ever seen in my life. So running around is a feat.
I only wear heels I can run in.
Yeah.
Or wellies. So I go from one extreme to the other.
Yeah, I can't run in any heels. No. So that's why I've got the bare sandals.
How about wellies, Jo?
I don't own any wellies, actually.
You don't own wellies? No. You see, I didn't for a long time, and then Country File happened, and now I've just got a ridiculous amount of outerwear. So if anybody wants to discuss outdoor clothing, clothes for the countryside, I'm the girl.
I love that idea. It's sort of like a Cher from Clueless thing, but like with all your,
Yeah.
Which wellies today? Red, yellow, polka dot.
Yeah.
Barber with which pair of hunters?
Well, someone did say to me, oh, you didn't just get a barber because you worked in Country. I'm like, no, I live in East London. I've had a barber for a long time. Yeah. A long, long time.
Don't you question me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So tell us now, I was telling you before we came on air with this that I watched your documentary that's coming out August 9.
Yes.
Called Me, My Family and Partition. And I have to say, it's one of the most mind-blowing, most gut-wrenching things I've ever watched.
I sort of want to thank you and apologize at the same time. But yeah, it really should be, because I basically talk about a period of history that is so shocking, so harrowing.
And forgotten,
yeah. So a couple of years ago, I was lucky enough to be asked to make my Who Do You Think You Are? And it took me to India, to North India, where something called the partition happened, where basically Pakistan and Bangladesh were created. Before 1947, it was all the Indian subcontinent. The British had ruled there for 200 years, huge involvement, the Raj, we know all about that. But at the end of that, 1947, the landmass was split. And when it was divided, absolute chaos happened and 1 million people died.
Oh my God.
And 15 million people were displaced. They're just figures, really. But if you really take a minute to think about 1 million people dying, it makes your hair stand on end.
And you discovered in your Who Do You Think You Are that your family was very much affected by this whole violence. Yeah.
Yeah, my mum's father, so my maternal grandfather, he was married. He had two children. He had a father. They all lived in what then became Pakistan. He was away because he was in the British Indian Army. And they all died. They were all slaughtered along with the million. So it's very harrowing, very traumatic. And also, as well as all of that, I discovered the plight of women. And that really shook me to the core. Basically, women, I mean, this is really shocking stuff. So hold on if you're easily shocked. Because women were being, as we know, they're a weapon of war, and they're kidnapped and they're raped and they're murdered. Families were choosing to kill their own wives and daughters and sisters rather than let them be murdered. Yeah. Or they were taking their own lives by jumping into wells. So naturally, as a woman, this really shocked me and affected me, but also as a British Asian woman who's comes from that part of the world ancestrally, it really moved me so much that when the Who Do You Think You Are went out, I got a huge reaction. And most people reacted like you, Joe. They said, my goodness, we're moved to tears by the humanity and the story, but we're ashamed to say we had no idea. And it wasn't just white British people saying that. This was British Asians saying
that.
Right,
but that's shocking.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. So it made me think, hang on a minute, I'm finally in a position where I could possibly do something about that and make another program. This year happens to be the 70th anniversary. So I've made a program. Well, I say I made it. An incredible TV company have made it. And it's...
Yeah, you front it. You're visiting the country and
And it was an idea that came from me. And we basically take four people who are the key main players in this, one Hindu, one Muslim, one British, colonial, and Sikh, that's my story. Mm. And we take them, second or third generation British, to go and experience and see what their family went through. So incredibly moving.
I think what really affected me about it is, you know, we've all been to museums, we've all studied history. It's when you're confronted with living history, when you're confronted with, you know, there's scenes like there's an old man who was 6 years old when he had to escape his village somehow. And he was very, very lucky to do that and still be alive today. And it's things like that when people who are, you know, we're living through it and going back to the house that they had to run from. It really affected me. It was really shocking but compelling. I had to keep watching.
And I think a really important thing, and I think I have to say, you know, it's quite easy in this day and age of social media and the Kardashians and Love Island, dare I say, and I say this as a fan of things like that, but, you know, it's good to see that programs like this are still being made, and there's still, you know, an audience and people are actually doing the right thing, I think. And that's what people tend to forget. You know, there's a reason why we're journalists, and it's to sort of shed light on things
stories,
like this.
Stories.
Absolutely.
Yes. And all these, and that's exactly what it is about, is telling stories. And I think when you're in a position where now as a broadcaster, on like having done Strictly and all this wonderful stuff, working on Country File, I'm able to go, and I love that as a British woman, to say, you know what, I want to tell you a story that happens to be my story, but also for me, it's really important that this isn't just my story, and it's not just a story of India and Pakistan and Bangladesh. It's a British story, and it's a British story because Britain was so heavily involved, but also because I'm British. And so by virtue of me being here, this is our story. I want people to, and people do, we connect to the humanity. But you're right, it is really shocking and really moving, and it only happened 70 years ago.
Yeah.
And the reason why it's so important to make this program now is they're the World War II generation who are dying out. And if we don't get these stories now, we will never get them. And the one thing that is different about partition to World War II is that nobody talks about it. There is no memorial in any country for the million people that died.
And why yeah, why crazy, do you think that is?
I think it's such a stain on everyone's history. I think you've got Pakistan who are celebrating the birth of a nation. You've got India celebrating independence. You've got Britain who cut and run and maybe are hiding under a duvet somewhere going, okay, let's just not, let's, you know, there may be a bit of that going on. Okay, we've dealt with India. Let's move on to something a bit prettier. And so then this, and it's such a horrific tragedy. It's such a brutal bit of history that I think people just found it really difficult to deal with.
So have you ever sensed any backlash in talking about it?
Absolutely, like really? What, no, none whatsoever. Right. I mean, when my Who Do You Think You Are went out, people were just so moved by it. And actually, people were thanking me to say thank you for telling this story. Mm. And hopefully, this program will, you know, it's television, so it's there to inform, but hopefully, it will start a conversation, even if people watching it, Asian families whose grandparent might be sitting there who's never spoken about it, even if someone turns around and says, Granny, do you relate to this? And maybe Granny finally is able to say, this is what happened. Mm. Even if that's all that happens, then, you know, at least we're opening up a dialogue.
So you took your mother
yes.
back to the homeland. How was that for her and you? Was it, you know, was it cathartic or was it incredibly difficult to make this story?
It was quite a bit of both, actually. It was difficult because my mum was very nervous. Also, I'm bringing her into my TV world. For me, it's all very, like, here we go, we're off to make TV. And mum was kind of, I'm having to look after mum. And but she was so moved. The idea for her to go to Pakistan and see where her father lived, she never thought this would happen in her life. Yeah. And she was so close to her dad. She was such a daddy's girl. And he died just before she got married. It's sort of moving beyond a way that she can even express how it makes her feel. It's really kind of made her feel closer to him in many ways. I don't think she'd ever really dealt with his death. 6 months after he died, she'd moved to Britain to get married to my dad.
Wow.
And had to just get on with life. So I think it was a really real moment of catharsis, actually.
Mm.
Actually, I've not really thought about it myself. God, now you're gonna, I'm looking at you and you're making me want to cry.
Sorry, I promised myself. I really found it really difficult to watch.
I think it's important that people watch it. I think it's well done, honestly. I think it's a really important watch.
I hope so. It'd be really interesting to hear what you know, readers of Glamour think about it.
Yeah.
Because it is, and especially for women, young women, I think we really need to think about how history is presented to us. I was shocked to discover that, you know, I'm interviewing men saying, oh, well, these women were dying with honor. I was like, no, I don't think so. It's not about honor. No,
they were dying.
They were dying. And if I was that person, and I could well have been, it's only 70 years ago, I don't think I would have been that happy about having to jump into a well.
No.
Or like, what is the choices offered to women here? Either we kill you, they kill you, or you kill yourself.
It's extraordinary for families to be having discussions like that with themselves. And what really strikes me about the documentary is, you know, on all sides, every side had that pain and that suffering.
Yes.
And it just seems crazy.
But I think that's probably what plays into the idea that no one really talks about it. Because they were all, I guess, kind of complicit. They were all, I guess, at fault on some level.
Yeah.
So, you know, no one comes out of this well, do they? And I guess that's why no one really wants to talk about it.
How do you begin?
Yeah.
How do you begin to talk about it? There's so much stuff to talk about that isn't talked about. How many women were abducted on either side? They were taken and converted, and once then both India and Pakistan after partition had this big agenda to try and bring these women back and repatriate them to their families, but their families didn't want to know them. Their families were like, well, you're tainted now.
Oh,
because
man.
I mean, it's shocking. So much. I mean, it's really shocking stuff. And I'm sorry if people are listening and going, when are we going to talk about nail varnish? I promise you we will, and I've got really nice gunmetal gray on my fingers. But it's really important that we at least have these, like, these programs are on. That's why, and for me, more, like, I can make these programs and put them out there.
Yeah.
But what I love is when people get in touch with me to tell me how it's affected them. That's when I feel, okay, this has been worth it. Like, this is what it's all about.
And so it's on BBC?
BBC One, yes.
Yeah. What time?
I think 8 o'clock.
8 o'clock.
But check your listings. Yeah. And yes.
August 9th.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And so what else are you working on at the moment?
Oh, well, Country File is ongoing, which I absolutely love because I get to go around the country, wear wellies.
In your barber.
In your welly wardrobe.
Although I am a total city girl. I grew up in Bradford, live in London, have lived for 16 years. I love the countryside, but absolutely clueless at the beginning, and I used to turn up in my box fresh kind of trainers, and then I'm like, okay, forget it, Anita, you're gonna have to get into wellies.
I'm sorry, the country it's beautiful, but I, you know,
Joe, are you throwing down the gauntlet? Can I, is this a challenge?
Try to convert her.
Can
I'd
I
love
get you into the countryside?
You could try. You wouldn't enjoy it very much. You'd be booting me back down again. Get rid of this whinging cow.
You love Cornwall.
I do love Cornwall.
Yes.
It's the beach and the pies.
Yeah.
That would be such a coup for me to take Joe to the countryside.
It could be a whole new documentary for you, I think.
I think so. We don't have to go far. We could find somewhere. We'll get you in wellies.
What do I have to wear? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's it. That would be the fun of it.
Yeah.
All right.
So we're working on that. And then I've got a really exciting project coming up later in the year, which I can't tell you too much about, but I will come back and talk to you about.
We'll hold you to
that. Very glamorous.
Why do they always do that?
I know. They can't wait to come back, Joe.
Look,
that's what it is. They're already promising to come back.
What happens in the pod cupboard stays in the pod cupboard, Anita. You can tell us.
Just us and a few thousand listeners. Yeah.
I'll give you one word.
Go on.
Bollywood.
I mean, as words go, that's pretty much a mic drop right there.
That was a real.
Wow.
We need some sort of EastEnders style.
I'm almost speechless now.
Just throw that one in there.
Wow. Okay. You must come
amazing.
Back then.
Yeah. Well, I'd rather go to the country than try to learn a Bollywood routine because that's really hard.
Yes, it is. Yeah. Not as hard as Strictly, but yes.
Really?
Probably harder. I don't know, actually. I've never tried to learn a Bollywood
routine. Yeah, people are going to get upset with you now. Like, she thinks that.
I know. Yeah. They'll push me even harder. So it's going to be a good year. It's going to be a great year. It's very exciting.
Mm. But not as exciting as helping us solve few dilemmas for the glamour audience.
Happily.
Are you ready?
It's okay.
Although I will admit my moral compass is very squiffy. So if it's dilemmas you want me to solve.
Oh, this is awesome.
You've come to the right people.
Good. Because I'm off the chart.
What is a moral compass?
Good. Yeah.
What is this you speak of?
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
What we should do is have in here like a Hey It's Okay tombola.
Oh, yeah.
Because we always, we let our guests sort of like have a look at some of the topics they want to talk about. I'd love to spin it out of like a lottery wheel.
The element of surprise.
You should do that. Yeah. That would be fun.
Right. Or maybe at least one of them has to be like a rogue one.
Yeah. If anyone knows how I make a big, really tombola. Glamorous tombola, let me know.
Yeah, we need some Blue Peter presenters or something to make one for us.
Lots of people in the countryside will have tombolas.
She's really trying to get you to the countryside.
Really, I'm warming to it.
But that is true. Yeah. Like country fairs, they love a tombola.
But I'm from Australia where they like a chook lotto. You don't know. Do you know about chook lotto?
Absolutely.
It's amazing. You buy a ticket and the prize is a big meat tray. And it's called the chook lotto. It's a chicken.
Wow. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Fill your freeze of 6 months. Yeah. Anyway, I'm off topic. Is it okay, Anita Rani, James Williams, is it okay to not be ambitious?
Well, I mean... Where do you want to go with this?
They're
one,
both frowning.
Well, no. I mean, because I think I'm going to say something that's not going to be very popular but I think it's slightly different for me. I make a joke of it, but I do genuinely kind of mean it. I'm a big believer in embracing the middle. And I think I have worked with people and I now continue to work with some young people who are so keen to get somewhere quicker, faster, to get that high paying, high pressure job. And I'm a bit like, why are you so stressed about this? Just relax, enjoy it, enjoy where you're at, enjoy what you're earning. You know, because the truth is, the further up you go, the more stressful it becomes. You don't actually enjoy your quality of life so much. And my mantra for, if I even have one, has always been about embracing the middle, which is kind of, I guess, anti the having ambition. I mean, don't get me wrong, I obviously had an ambition to get to a certain point, but I'm very much happy now at the level where I'm at.
Which is good.
Yeah.
It's good to know that the deputy editor doesn't want happy to be the editor, isn't it? I think that.
There was a subtle message there, wasn't there? Don't worry. And then at home, he goes home and schemes.
Yeah. My Machiavellian sort of, you know.
Pins in a voodoo doll of me. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
James, we believe you.
Yeah.
Totally.
How do I feel? Is it okay not to be ambitious? Of course, but my perspective is, and I guess I'm coming from a female perspective, that I get to travel around the country and I get working on Countryfile and the One Show, and I'm lucky I get to meet people from all walks of life, and I meet so many young women who I think put a full stop on themselves and second guess or somehow believe that they're not good enough to do X, Y, and Z. So I feel there needs to be, and I'm kind of with you, Joe, we can check, and Glamour magazine is so good at doing that, it's kind of empowering young women and young men to feel that they are worth whatever that dream is, however silly it is. And I guess because we talk about it being the X Factor generation. Everybody wants to be a pop star. Well, everybody doesn't want to be a pop star. No. There are lots of young people with really serious ambitions, and they want to become doctors. Maybe their teachers told them they're only good enough to, I don't know, whatever the job might be. But whatever it is, I think we should encourage young people to go for it.
I think you're absolutely right, but I'm really on the fence on this one. Oh my gosh, that's so rare, because I feel like, you know, absolutely go out, be the best you can be. Sometimes I think that we're so busy selling that message that people are ashamed if they don't want to be top of the tree, or they don't want to be the CEO, or, do you know what I mean?
Or maybe it's about being the best at what you do.
I
think that's what it is. So if you are a nurse, and goodness me, you're the backbone of society, or you're police, the centerpiece of the country we live in, be the best nurse that you can be.
You want people who are there because they really want to be there.
And also,
I think it's about, you know, acknowledging other people have different goals and have different levels of ambition. And I think it's about not judging people according to wherever you're at on the ambition scale. Not everybody has to be at the same level, and thank God they're not, because otherwise we'd all be competing for the same job.
Here's a bit of honesty. Am I the only one who's sort of like sometimes have been on a treadmill where got to get to the top, got to get that job, and then not really, really like wondering, sort of like, why did I want that?
Yeah, I do think
careful
that,
what you wish for.
I mean, it happens in TV all the time. You get these brilliant directors who love making telly, then all of a sudden they're an exec and they're like, ooh, but I really enjoyed being out in the field. It happens all the time. But I think ambition, because you're in a career, that's one thing. But I think there's also being ambitious and happy about knowing that I'll give you a prime example. I'll make it personal. I've got a younger brother who I love to bits, and he came and moved to London with me, and I'm like, yeah, I love telly. I'm like media stereotype. Yeah. I'm climbing the greasy pole. And my brother worked in advertising and he absolutely hated it. And he one day just said to me, you know what? I'm not like you. And I just want a really nice job where I can have a nice house, a lovely wife. And I come home at 6 o'clock and I've got time to make models and write a comic, because that's my brother.
And that's his passion.
And now he works as a lecturer, and he has the best job, and he loves it, because he basically, I don't really know what he does for a living, nothing, sits in the pub with his students.
Sounds good to me.
And has a great life. And he's brilliant at it, because he loves it. He was awful in advertising because he hated it. So
I'll be personal. Years ago, I was offered a job in New York. And at that time, it was like, you know, magazine editor, big magazine. That was the next step. And I kind of went through all these motions, and I suddenly realized I only wanted it because that's what everybody else expected me to want. And I had a real sort of like jump back in a cold feet moment. And it was, was a real key. It was like, oh God, how ambitious am I supposed to be? And that's when I think of those sorts of things, I think it's fine to find your level of ambition.
Absolutely.
And not feel pressured to want more.
There's always going to be that ambition crossroads, isn't there, where you eventually, no matter what job you do, there's always that tipping point where your job stops being one thing and tips into being more about bureaucracy and staffing issues and budgets, and whether it's TV or whatever, you know, there's always going to be that element to it. So I think you have to think long and hard, because ultimately, especially if you're in a creative job, you know, often the creativity is not the be all and end all once you're higher up the ladder. You know, it's not about that anymore. So I think, but you know, I think ultimately it's all down to what works for you. Yeah. And like your brother or whoever, you all know what's right for you.
All my friends who've had children and have chosen to step back from their career, who for me are wonder women, like how they do what they do, how they bring, and they, and you know, I guess we need to make society not make people like women who have had kids and stepped away feel that they should be, you know, we should.
I completely
agree. And on the flip side of what you, you almost touched on it earlier, I think, though, Anita, it's very different, I think, you know, for an ambitious woman can sometimes be seen as, oh, she's a bit too out there. She's a bit too, like, you know, because I know people who are very open about their ambition, females. And I've heard people say things, not quite mean-spirited things about them, but they would never have said that about a man.
Absolutely.
So I think it's a very interesting argument about, you know, it's very easy for me to stand here and make a sort of joke message about, oh, you know, embracing where you're at, but you know, that's my white male privilege speaking, without getting too deep about it, but
that's
absolutely true. You know, it's a very different thing for, I think, for women out there, and I think that's a really interesting point you made.
I love that you are able to see beyond your white male privilege.
Well, that's what working at Glamour for 14 years does to you, you see, Anita, you know.
No, but you're right. I think it's absolutely
poor James
accepting. Yes, yeah.
That should be a hashtag at some
every
point.
Now and again. I'm going to get into HR one day, every now and again, at a features meeting. I'm like, yeah, what is wrong with you men? What is wrong with you?
Well, I'm just like literally shouldering all the mistakes of my entire gender.
They don't even tell you why they're angry. They just come and like throw cups of water in your face. Abuse in the office.
I love it. So yeah, I guess where does that leave us on ambition?
I think just chill out
and
be where you want to be. Like you're on a roll at the moment, Anita,
so
you're loving it and you're going to go with it. And for other people, they might just be a bit tired and want to...
Do what you want, what you genuinely want to do, rather than what you think. Like, you hit the nail on that, not what people expect you to do. Do what you want.
You know what the glamour message is, everyone.
Yes.
Amen.
Hey, James Williams.
Oh, hey, Joe Elvin.
What are you doing on September 16th?
Well, the London Podcast Festival is on, Joe, and they've only got an invited Hey It's OK along.
No way. We better get some people along.
Don't make us sit in a pod cupboard all alone, dear listeners. Come and see me and Joe and a fabulous celebrity guest.
Is it OK, guys, to be embarrassed by a family member?
Yes.
Because that's what they do.
That's their job, isn't
it? Just checking. I just need to text my sister and make sure my parents don't listen to the podcast.
I feel the need to put a caveat in here. I'm not embarrassed about my family in real life, or IRL, I believe is what the kids say. But I am slightly embarrassed of my relatives when it comes to things like Facebook. And I'm not going to lie. A little bit of wee comes out when there are some alerts that come up on Facebook saying, blank has just commented on your Facebook status. I'm like, oh no, what have they got? They said, now? How have they outed me? What have they said?
I love my parents, but you know, there's always the button. But I'm always, whenever I see the alert that says my father's commented on something I've said on Facebook, I'm transported back to having my girlfriends in my bedroom and my dad coming in to impress us all with a hilarious joke. And it's like, it's kind of just...
It's the modern day equivalent of it, isn't it?
God!
I have my... I love my Uncle David. He's out there, hopefully listening, because he's a very big fan and supporter.
He's very funny on Facebook.
But he's always there. Like, it's always humiliating me and then slightly flirting with my friends. Ooh. He's kind of like my Kate Middleton Uncle Gary.
Yes.
But much cooler, Uncle David, for listening.
I suppose at least none of us have Uncle Gary.
None of us have Uncle Gary. I mean, everyone's family is embarrassing. That's what they're there for. I have the added extra of my family being Indian. So the cultural thing. So growing up here,
I'm not
going to
jump on that. Only you're allowed to say that.
And I will talk about it. I mean, I love them dearly. And obviously I've now come to a place of acceptance. But when I was little, we all want to fit in. When you're little, you just want to be like everybody else. And we would go on these wonderful day trips. And anyone visiting from India, my dad's really adventurous. He's one of these cool dads. He's like, bundle us in the car. Let's go to Blackpool. Let's go to Whitby. Right, we're on the road. And or the countryside.
Yeah.
And
stop banging on about the countryside. I get it. You like the countryside.
I love the city.
They have great fish and chips there in Whitby.
They do.
Oh, they
that
do actually.
Get you there.
That is true.
The Weatherby Whaler.
That's not the country.
No, it's not. But it's on the edge of the North Yorkshire Moors. Yeah. But my mum would pack these incredible picnics of Barantas, which are stuffed chapatis and samosas and all this Indian food. And I would just be mortified because I just want cheese sandwiches, right?
Yeah. Oh, but that's...
However, I have come to love that. And now I do exactly the same. But my mum is the most embarrassing. She is the most embarrassing because in my mum's head, I'm still seven and I'm not... a 39-year-old woman who works in telly and has that absolutely no. So if we go anywhere, she'll say, oh, my daughter, she works in telly, yes. And then I'll go, God, mum, please. And she goes, but if you don't believe me, you can Googles her. Not Google, Googles. You can Googles her, which I love, which has now become...
That's adorable.
No, it's amazing.
Oh, God, you see, this is why nobody knows.
No, you can't be a sort of parent malapropism. My mum is the queen of malapropism. She's always using the wrong word for the wrong meaning. She can't get any celebrity's name right, you know. And although, hilariously, a couple of weeks ago, and she's only recently come onto Facebook, and I got trolled by my own mother, and it got such a huge amount, because obviously my lovely friends all loved it, because this is quite an embarrassing story. I sort of said something, you know you're getting old when you accidentally spray hair lacquer under your armpits, and my mum literally said, should have gone to Specsavers. That's literally all she said. It got like 18 likes from all of my friends, but
that's very funny.
But it's right, it's as it should be, you know. As they get older, they should be allowed to take the piss out of us, I think.
Well, going back to the filming, I took my mum to Pakistan, wonderful experience, and lots of people have interviewed me about this, and it's a very heavyweight interview, but now we're here and I can openly admit this is catharsis for me. It's the first time I've travelled with my mother in a long time. We've not spent that much length, that quality of time together. And we get there and we've got two hotel rooms. And Mum's like, oh no, we must share a room. I'm like, okay, fine. It's okay, Mum. We're in Pakistan. You've
Alert.
Never been here.
Alert.
Which is just like, I'm going to spend quality time with Mum. But then, which is all fine. That was all great. It's when I'm sitting as a professional with all my crew, the director, the cameraman, and Mum is regaling them with stories of my childhood. The most embarrassing stories.
Come on, that's gold for everybody else.
Exactly. It's as it should be. I'm sorry, Anita, that's as it should be.
Yes, and they had looks in their eyes like you, like, yeah, come on, bring it on, tell us more. I'm dying. And then I turned into a petulant teenager and walked out of a room.
Oh!
But that's the thing, isn't it? We spend all of this time...
I want to hear the stories now.
But isn't it amazing how you can be... You know, you could be away from your parents. You could be independent for like 20 years. You've lived your life. You earn your own money. You have your own house. And the second, within 10 minutes of being back within your parents' company, you turn back into that petulant teenager. Yeah. It's amazing. Yeah, the dynamics, really, nothing changes.
Oh, God. I just, you know, it's when my mother once got on there and started telling everybody about some boy I brought home once. And, you know, it was just a really embarrassing story. And I sort of emailed her and said, can I just remind you? My Facebook friends include my friends,
my colleagues, my husband,
my boss, you know, loads of PRs that I, so she was like, oh, sorry. Like, she was really cross with me.
But to be honest, I think now if you've got a healthy family dynamic, you pretty much know if at any point you introduce your parents or any close relatives to your friends, it's kind of like open season. You know what you're letting yourself in for. It's only right that it should be that way. And ultimately, we're getting our revenge now because we're technically embarrassing them by talking about it on this podcast.
Yes, absolutely.
It's come full circle.
No, my mum would love it. She'll be laughing away. That's the joy of it. But I love meeting my friends' parents because it puts them into context all of a sudden. You know, it's great.
Do you know what I love? I love my friends meeting my friends, my parents. I love my parents meeting my friends' parents because there's this great, you know, everyone's come from different parts of the world and everything. But the second you put groups of parents of a friendship group together, it all makes sense. Because suddenly they have such similarities.
See, I miss all of that because my parents are in Australia.
Yeah.
So I don't know any of that. So they just sort of like have to reach their tentacles into my
Facebook
cringeometer from afar on social media. Yeah.
But I guess, well, we're meeting other people's parents and parents meeting parents, but everyone's culture's so different. Yeah. So if you've got parents that are quite kind of uptight or kind of, you know, do things a certain way, and maybe Aussies, you know, your guys are so laid back,
that's the problem. There's no filter. And it's like we need one, you know.
It was a picture of the Queen.
No filter.
Well, there was a picture of the Queen recently, and it was the guy from Canada, Canadian prime, not Justin Trudeau, be still my beating heart. It was another Canadian diplomat, and they were coming down the staircase, and he put his hand on her elbow, which is kind of a natural thing to do, but it was like, broke protocol.
An Australian prime minister did that in the 50s, and it was like an international scandal.
Wow. But in Australia, that's perfectly normal.
Yeah.
Like,
so there's always that cultural...
Touching? What is this touching you speak of?
Yeah. But yeah, I'm just going to put it out there. Yeah. My family's the most embarrassing.
But the truth is, we love them for it. And that's the thing. I think it's only right. Yeah, it's okay to be embarrassed, but as long as you genuinely love them.
Yes.
I think that you should never be embarrassed about where you come from. I always say that I'm never embarrassed about where I come from.
No,
I can be embarrassed by the members of my family, by things they'll bring up about me, of course, but I'm never ashamed of who I'm related to.
That's absolutely a really good point, because absolutely, and that's, you've got to fundamentally own who you are, because
totally.
It empowers you from the core. Yeah. And it's what makes us interesting. The fact that we all come from these different backgrounds, and my dad was one of six in Bradford. I always say my dad's family is like East is East, but it's what makes them so cool, because they've got this unique northern perspective.
And then on the other side of the scale, I'm from the western suburbs of Sydney, which makes me a Westie, which when I was a kid was the worst possible thing you could ever be. But I felt like, you know, sort of like coming to London and running a fashion magazine, I have to tell everyone I'm a Westie for all the other Westies.
You're doing it for them.
Yeah, Westies rule, as they used to say. Every now and again, I like to read out some of your reviews for Hey It's Okay. Thank you to every single one of you. I'm telling you, it gets me through endless bad days hearing your lovely things that you say. And we're so touched that you're out there and listening to us. And as a thank you, I want to read a review this week and send a little pod cupboard present to CatG34, who said, I have recently discovered this podcast, and all I can say is a huge, in uppercase, huge thank you. I am currently in a job that I cannot stand and know that I have to put up with it whilst I find the right thing. And sitting with my headphones in listening to you definitely makes the days more bearable. Well, hi, Kat.
Hi, Kat.
I hope the job recruiting's going well.
Yeah.
Hang in there. Take the paycheck, and we'll keep making the podcast. And if you email me at editor@glamourmagazine.co.uk, I will make sure you get a little present. So thank you. You'll be released from the pod cupboard soon, Anita Rani.
Oh, no, I'm having a great time. This is good.
Let's see. This was my idea, this one, because this is something I'm terribly guilty of. But do you think it's okay to slag off that book you haven't read or that film you haven't seen? I'm afraid I do it a bit.
I absolutely going to bowl right in there and say yes, yes, yes. The world is full of great art, great culture, great literature. People have taken time to produce wonderful movies, to think about scores of music. There's some great things out there. You haven't got enough time in your life to be wasting it reading 50 Shades of Grey.
I actually have read 50 Shades.
Oh, have you? I didn't know you'd even read it.
I haven't got the time.
In my defense, I read it because I was supposed to be on a television show talking about the Phenom.
Right.
And I thought, well, I better read that.
She does her research. She's a good journalist, Jo.
Sometimes. And then they didn't make the television show. And
you'd read it.
And there was like a couple of hours of my life I couldn't get back.
See, I read all three of them. But I think it's because I was so immersed and I got so bored, don't get me wrong. I mean, another sex scene.
I was really excited. I thought I was going to get all turned on and have loads of great sex. And it was like, the sex was like, it was so badly written. It was like, they're at it again.
But I was so immersed and I just had to find out what happened. But I mean, I'm never getting that time back ever again. No. I mean, the thing is, I'm quite lucky, I guess, as part of this job, you know, you tend to get sent books in advance, you get to go see screenings of films in advance, so you know, and so I'm in a privileged position, I guess, whereby I tend to see most things, so I have an informed opinion. And I have to say, I tend to be like, if I don't have an informed opinion, because I have far too many opinions as it is, I have far too many informed opinions, I try not to have any uninformed opinions.
No, I think you're right, you're absolutely right. And having said that, you know,
we don't care.
Yeah, no, so part of me, absolutely, as journalists, it's like, of course, like, I wouldn't come on and say, right, I'm gonna, like, if I was asked to go on Newsnight to talk about 50 Shades of Grey, I'd probably read the book first before going on there. However, in like my life in general, I'm snobby enough to turn around and say to all my mates, you know what, whatever.
But don't you think,
I don't think I need to read it tonight.
I just think there's a lot of things out there that get so hyped to the wazoo that I feel like I have seen them and I have read them.
But
I'm kind of like bluffing my way through a dinner party and thinking I know enough about it to say,
The hype thing is a very interesting thing, I think, because you have to really catch something at the right time. Because I think, you know, I saw La La Land early on.
I was just thinking of the same thing.
And I loved it. I then have friends who saw it literally post-6 month hype, who literally walked in and thought it was the biggest pile of shit they've ever seen.
Because their expectations are so high
as a result of the hype.
So I was the opposite. I thought, oh God, everyone's talking about this. It's a musical. I'm going to hate it. I have no desire to watch it. And then I was on a flight and I thought, I'd watched everything else on the flight because I've spent a long time traveling recently. I thought, you know what? I'm going to watch La La Land. I loved it.
Yeah.
I loved it, actually. And I just thought...
had the sort of hype died down a bit by the time you got to see it, maybe?
Yeah, and also I'd sort of put that to the back of my mind. I
just
won't take it
have a bad
is.
Word said about the girls. I'm sorry. I just won't.
Ryan
there are films of his I haven't seen that I'm sure are marvellous. I just think he's wonderful.
He's wonderful. Yeah. I watched a film recently with him and the Fass together. Fassbender and Gosling in one movie.
What film was that?
Oh, well,
be illegal.
Yeah. It's the new Terrence Malick movie called Song to Song. So it's all very pretentious and arty. However, if you like Gosling and you like Fassbender, there's a lot of them on screen.
Yeah. That's a lot.
Not as much as of Fassbender as you saw in Shame, but there's still a lot of him on screen.
I want to jump in here and say, though, I do feel there's a special place in hell for those people who literally just live to say, it's not as good as the book, though, is it?
Yeah.
I hate those people because... Okay, the truth is, I'm an avid reader. I read a lot. So, you know, I often will agree, yes, sometimes the film's not done a book justice. I would just sometimes say there are examples like 50 Shades of Grey, the movie, where I would argue the film is a hell of a lot better than the book.
So I didn't read any Dan Brown books precisely because they were huge and everyone was reading it. I was like, oh, I'm just not interested. And it's like... It's such an annoying thing about my personality. It's that petulant teenager. Well, I'm not going to read it because everyone's into it.
I know, I'm the same.
But I watched the film it was a Sunday afternoon and it was on, you know, and I absolutely loved it. I thought the film of the first book, Da Vinci Code, I was like, actually, I can just switch off and get into this.
Yeah.
And really enjoyed it. Really enjoyed it.
I like to think I'm that kind of person that can differentiate, you know, and say, actually, no, that's a good film adaptation of a book. But, you know, those people that literally just live to say, well, it's not as good as the book,
but
is it?
But you're never, ever going to get the nuance of books.
Yes.
Well, also
onto screen, you just can't do it.
It's also far more subjective. Everyone,
unless you want to watch a 7-hour film,
precisely.
You know, but also, a book, you will all have a different picture of a person, and it always makes me laugh when somebody is cast in a film adaptation.
Oh, and everyone's outraged.
Uproar. Yeah. I mean, it's unbelievable, isn't it?
That's not Katniss.
No.
The other thing I don't like is when they remake perfectly fantastic movies and then they're terrible.
Yeah.
Nobody watch the remake of Point Break. You will be so upset. You will be so...
Yeah,
I'm.
Are you talking like Point Break, some kind of
great movie,
seminal classic? Is it?
Keanu and Patrick Swayze.
It's all right.
Surfing.
Oh, it's all right.
There's going to be some angry people out there
Sorry,
Elvin.
Sorry, look, bring it.
Come on, Elvin.
She can't go to the countryside. Yeah. She can't meet any Point Break fans. I mean, literally, she's living on the edge.
I quite liked it. You know, I don't know. Though I wouldn't get angry about a remake of Point Break.
Okay, well, it was just because it was such a terrible remake. It's like, first of all, don't remake it. If you're going to remake something.
But what I do admire then about what you're saying, Joe, maybe a little bit for you, Anita. See, my problem is I've got terrible FOMO, like cultural FOMO. So even if there's something being massively hyped, I pretty much have to check it out just so I can have an... Like I said, I like having opinions. It's my hobby. So I need to then basically find out about it so I can have one.
So you will sit through...
Oh, you don't need to find out about it to have an opinion. That's what I'm telling you.
You will sit through that next terrible 2-hour Adam Sandler movie just so that you could have an opinion.
I'm an idiot. Why have I been worrying about informed opinions all this time? I'm a fool. An absolute fool.
Also, I have softened. I used to be much worse, but I've married an amazing, amazing man who has... the worst taste ever. Like he's in movies, he will just watch he'll just sit there and he'll just watch anything. So I've allowed myself to now kind of, not everything I watch has to be in black and white. I have subtitles.
My husband is probably the most well-read person that I've ever met, but he likes a lot of films the same as me, but he loves something with big old explosions in it.
Yeah,
he loves it.
Yeah.
So,
but it is the truth, isn't it?
I've watched every Jason Statham movie.
Purely for the art.
Yeah.
I actually really enjoyed it. It's crazy.
No, he's a very highly paid actor. He's obviously doing something.
Let's be honest, though. You go on Netflix and you know there are certain films on there. Oh, right, that's won all these Oscars. And that's been directed by so-and-so. And that's got this amazing actress. And you think, well, I should really watch it. And then you just find yourself going... Or Clueless.
Yeah.
Isn't it? You just go...
Clueless is a great movie.
Because ultimately, you just want to watch something that's going to make you feel good, a bit nostalgic.
But Clueless is actually a really
awesome
great
film.
Movie.
Well, it's Jane Austen.
Yes. And very clever.
A very good adaptation, you see.
Yes.
Not as good as the book.
But that's very different
to... It's better than the book. Well, way better. Oh, my God. Joe. She really is living on the edge
joking.
Today.
I'm joking. Oh, my God. I think, you know, the glamour pod people... You listen to the podcast. I don't know what they're called yet.
That makes them sound like scary aliens. The pod people.
I think, you know, they know that
But
they're not judging us.
No,
so are you watching Love Island? Let's get topical.
I was massively.
I'm not either.
I was massively into Love Island. Yeah.
And now it's huge, right? So everybody's watching it. And I know I don't need to watch it, even though I have, because I work in telly. So I've switched on and gone. And then I thought, well, you know what? I see that it's great and it's people love it. But I haven't got time for it.
It's a big. A big commitment, to be fair. Yeah. You know, it was a lot of.
And also, when I go home and see all those bodies that are much better than mine,
I felt really inadequate.
But on a serious level as well, I think as well, you know, we made a pact a long time ago that, you know, these days cinema tickets, books even, are expensive. So to be honest, we are not in the habit of promoting things that we haven't seen there. I would not honestly be able to say this film is great. Go and spend your 15, 20 quid on a ticket to go and see it, you know. And we often won't review a film.
That's why I'm not in charge of that.
But, you know, we won't review a film rather than say it's horrible because we're not really in the spirit of slagging things off.
So this is opinion I have about reviews. I don't think I could do a review. Because I think I would find it really difficult to take somebody's art. If someone's taken the time to write a book and then fantastically had it published, even if I thought it was the biggest load of dross, I probably couldn't read it and then review it and say it was terrible. I think I'd rather review something and say to people, this is great.
Yeah, but I enjoy telling people that something's great.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Don't you think?
Absolutely. Yeah.
But then don't you think a lot of reviewers love telling people it's terrible? Because, you know, there are some critics out there, you know, they don't like anything. I actually want to sit them down and go, what do you like? Because you don't seem to like anything.
I think they feel like they're not doing their job if they like something. Yeah. And I don't know. That's why I don't really, I don't think I let reviews influence what I go and see or not, if I'm honest. I wouldn't, you know, if I decided to see something, I want to make up my own mind.
Word of mouth, as in the friend's word of mouth.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's far more.
I think, does this all stem back to when we were kind of teenagers and your choice and your taste so much defined who you were and who your set was and what crowd you hung out with? And actually, I mean, I have softened quite a lot the older I get, thank goodness, because you can't live like a 16-year-old forever. It's terrible. But still, to some degree, I know that if somebody says that they listen to whatever kind of music it is, that instantly I'm like, okay, you're part of my tribe.
I dumped my first boyfriend because he was a solid Rick Astley man and I was very much into the Stone Roses.
A dumpable offence.
You couldn't bring him to the Stone Roses. He wasn't interested.
Oh, no, he thought that was shit. Yeah.
But also, I think I love the fact that you basically...
Can you say shit on the Glamour podcast? Yeah. Oh, what?
We are well rock and roll.
We are not the BBC.
No, it's funny, isn't it, how you can... I think that's a sign of getting old and growing into your confidence, your skin, is that when you actually admit to liking terrible things.
Yes. Yeah.
But also, can we also have a quick moment to talk about Celine Dion becoming cool again? Well, cool. Yeah. I say
when,
again.
Has that happened?
Oh, my God, it's happening. She's been embraced by the fashion community. Yeah. Everyone's obsessed with Celine Dion, and 20 years ago this poor woman literally was the butt of every joke.
If you hang around long enough, you'll become ironic.
Exactly. If you hang around long enough, you will become cool. There's hope for all of us,
because that song, that painful song,
My Heart Will Go On, she's gone on 20 years later. She's now in Balmain swanning around French Vogue looking amazing.
Quite compelling.
It really is.
So I don't know if we've solved this, and I probably haven't made myself look very good, but I have been known to go, oh yeah, that looks terrible, when I haven't seen it. I don't know. I'm just going to own it. I don't know about you, Anissa.
I think you should own it. I'm going to be somewhere in the middle, actually, because I am absolutely, that is my instinct. But I'm conflicted because I have this saintly husband who's going, but you know what? It doesn't matter. People have different tastes. So I'm kind of like,
at least they tried.
I try to not get angry or upset about people not liking the things that I culturally like. I mean, I don't get me wrong. I am very suspicious of people that don't like the things that I like, but I don't judge them or, you know, wish them in any way ill will.
Well, that's very big of you.
Thank you.
And on that note, I think we're going to say, Anita Rani, it's been such a joy to have you in the podcast.
Oh, I've had so much fun. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Me, My Life and Partition is out August 9, 2-part series on BBC.
Check it out.
You've got to see it. Check your listings for details, but it's definitely a must view for everybody. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.